Hi, Maya. It's your creator, Karen. Hey, I hate to pressure you, but I really need to know some information. So if you could, as in as soon as possible, write me a letter and tell me all the bad things that have happened in your life, that would be greatly appreciated. Thanks. Hi, you're listening to Write from Karen. My name's Karen. This podcast is about a little bit of everything. Life, my writing, book reviews, politics, and religion. Grab a cup of coffee and get comfortable. I have a lot to say about nothing. So Maya is my main character in my upcoming NaNoWriMo project. NaNoWriMo, for those of you that don't know, is National Novel Writing Month. It takes place next month, and it's a challenge, it's an annual challenge, for you to write 50,000 words in 30 days. I am stupid enough to participate in this year's challenge. I haven't actually participated in quite a few months, but I'm going to do it next month. This is the first time I've really tried doing it, working full time. No, that's not right. That's not true. I think I tried it either last year or the year before last and completely gave up before I even got, I think maybe, 8,000 words in. I just couldn't do it. So this time around, I'm going to manage my time. I'm going to see if I can pull this off. But Maya is my main character in my story, as of yet untitled. And I was watching some of Abby Emmons' videos, which, by the way, I highly recommend. She's awesome, and I can't believe she doesn't have more followers, so go follow her. And she is kind of breaking down the story bit by bit and, you know, kind of giving you some ideas and some tips on how you can build a better story. And her big thing is it's all about the character. If you don't have a strong character, you don't have a strong story. And I have to say, I agree with her, because if you don't care about the character, then you're not going to really care to continue reading. So she's talking about once you kind of have a character profile in place, which I do sort of, it's coming along. She recommends that you actually write about the character's backstory. Like, what is the inciting incident in this character's backstory that basically is a turning point in this character's life, and now she is the way she is, and she has this misbelief, she has this thing that happened in her life is kind of what helped shape her into the person that she is today, flaws and all, which of course you want a character with flaws. Who wants to read about someone perfect? And she's recommending that you write a backstory of that incident. Now, obviously, this will probably never get into your actual novel or story, but, and it is, sounds like a lot of extra work. In fact, she says her backstories can be 25,000 words long, which, I'm not sure I want to go that far, but the idea intrigues me. And I think really after listening to her talk about the importance of character and having a strong character for your story, I kind of feel like that may be where I've been going wrong all these years as far as what I write. I can write crap. That's not a problem. But my problem is I get to a point where I get stuck. I don't know where I'm going with it. I don't really know my characters. They're two dimensional, and I need to do a better job of fleshing them out and putting some meat on their bones and actually having a solid, character with, characteristics and a backstory and goals and beliefs and things like that. So that's what I'm going to do with Maya. I am working through a Preptober workbook to kind of flesh out my story and just give myself a better idea of what the hell I'm doing, to be honest. And one of the things recommended in the workbook was to write a letter to the author. And that's definitely what I plan on doing here pretty soon on my blog. By the way, if you want to follow along or see some links to the things that I'm talking about today on this podcast, my blog is writefromkaren.com, and that's write, W-R-I-T-E, from Karen.com. So if you want to go there and visit it and find out what the heck I'm talking about, I have some links and some videos from Abby on my blog as well. The videos that have actually inspired me and the videos that I'm talking about in this podcast. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to have Maya write a letter to me. Obviously, I'll post it on my blog, and she's basically writing it to you as well. And then I'm going to sit down. I'm going to actually write her backstory, and I have a pretty good idea of what the inciting incident is that kind of changes her for the worst. Because obviously the story that I'm writing will hopefully eventually get to a point where I'm changing her for the better. So I will put that on my blog if you're interested in reading along. I might possibly even read some of that next podcast if you're interested in listening. But Maya is my main character. She is 24 years old, and I actually have a picture of her in my mind anyway, on my blog that I posted a few days back. If you're interested in seeing some of the characters that I plan on putting in this story and what they look like, I just picked some very attractive people from Pinterest to be my characters, because, I mean, at this point, they're my main characters now. I kind of hate to pick all these soap opera worthy characters to be in my story, but at this point, they're all young and attractive, and I'm sure I'll run across some unsavory characters with more physical character flaws at some point in the story, but right now, this is what I'm starting with. So anyway, so that's kind of my goal. That's kind of where I am in this Preptober process. This Preptober, for those of you that don't know, is the month of October, the month before November, where you kind of dedicate the month to prep for your NaNoWriMo project. This is a new process for me. I've been quite excited about it because this is not something I've ever done in my NaNoWriMo projects in the past. I've just kind of, winged it because I'm a little bit of a pantser. I like to write by the seat of my pants as far as any stories. It's more exciting to me. I like to see where my characters take me. But like I've mentioned, I get to a point where I'm stuck and then I can't go any further, and it frustrates me. I don't want to do that this time around. So I'm going to do a hybrid approach and do what's called the headlight method, where I outline to a point and then I kind of stop and reevaluate and then outline to another point. Kind of like, you can only see so far in your headlights when you're driving at night. That's kind of what I'm doing now. So I do have an opening scene in mind, and I did buy a whiteboard, and I have been writing some stickies and sticking them on the whiteboard. Just some scene ideas that I can, rearrange if I want to. But to me, that's very encouraging. This is way more than I've ever done to prepare for this in the past. So I'm really excited about it. So that's kind of where I am right now with my Preptober. I'm going to write a letter. I should say Maya is going to write a letter to me, and then I'm going to write the inciting incident in her story to kind of give me an idea of who she is and what kind of person she is. And I will post those on my blog if you're interested. Speaking of that, I do plan on posting excerpts of my project throughout the month of November as well. I mean, let's face it, that may be the only thing I end up posting on my blog during the month of November, because I'm going to be so busy with work and everything else. So again, if you're interested, writefromkaren.com, check it out, and you can kind of let me know what's going on. And I'm also on NaNoWriMo as well, the website. It's it's NaNoWriMo.org. It's the name of the website. My username is Take2Max. That's T-A-K-E, the number 2, Max. And if you want to find me on NaNoWriMo and friend me, I even have a writing group that I started on the NaNoWriMo website. It's called Write Away, W-R-I-T-E, Away, A-W-A-Y. And if you want to send me your username, I can add you to the group and we can chit-chat if you want during the month of November, and you can let me know how you're doing with your project. So anyway, just another, plug if you want to try to touch base and keep track. And, it's always good to have a community of like-minded writers to encourage each other throughout this very challenging month. So that's where I am in the Preptober NaNoWriMo project. So let's move along. Let's go to some life events. Last time I left you guys, I was getting ready to paint the house. Our house is nearly finished, not quite yet. That's what Kevin is out doing today. He is painting the house. I have finished all the windows. I need to go out and scrape them all off the paint, around the windowsills and stuff, which is strangely satisfying, actually. I've never done that before. I did that all day yesterday. So that's kind of where we are on the house situation. As far as work, I was on vacation and I went back to work for the first time this past Friday. I know I'm one of those weird people that, because I have clinic on Mondays and Wednesdays with my doctor, I'm a medical assistant with the healthcare, if in case anybody's wondering what I'm doing, what I do during my day job. Our clinic is on Monday and Wednesday, and those are typically the busiest days of the week for me because I'm trying to, you know, make sure that all the patients are taken care of and the doctor's taken care of. So to come back from vacation on a Monday during a clinic day is very disorienting, and I don't like it at all. So to avoid that situation, whenever I go on vacation, I usually will come back on a Friday. That way I have a whole day to prepare for the upcoming clinic, catch up on emails and phone calls and flags, and which are messages that are sent to me through our electronic health system. So that's what I did this past Friday. I just went in there and got caught up on some stuff. And it never fails when I leave for vacation. It seems like several big things happen around the office. Administrative stuff, procedural issues, that kind of thing. Nothing really new and nothing that interesting for you guys. If you're not in the business, so to speak, then you're probably not going to understand or care. But one thing that caught my eye and I thought was kind of interesting is as I'm walking into the hospital, because our office is actually located at the hospital, I noticed that there was a huge like starter home building set up in the parking lot. And I was like, what the heck is that? And of course, it wasn't there before I went on vacation. And I walk into the office and I ask everybody, what's that building doing out front? And nobody can really tell me what the deal is. But we're speculating that that is an area for all of the employees to get tested for COVID. Say what? Because we currently have a tent outside of our ER to triage anybody coming into the ER to make sure they don't have COVID before allowing them into the hospital. Makes sense, right? Well, apparently, and this was kind of happening even before I left for vacation, there's been an increase in COVID testing positive employees. So I don't know if that's just because I really don't know why that's happening, honestly. I mean, we do have an increased number of COVID patients in the hospital currently. When I checked to see how many are in there now, because we have a daily report that comes out to let all the employees know, just kind of keep them updated on what's happening. We have the most that we've ever had in the hospital right now. And I think that's largely due to our hospital is located in a bigger city and we're surrounded by a bunch of smaller cities. And I think that may be one reason why we have so many people in the hospital now, because we get a lot of outlying city patients that come into our hospital. So I think that's one reason why we have so many people in the hospital right now. But I'm assuming since we have our own little building, specialized building out in the parking lot, that the problem has gotten worse since I've been on vacation. I know that obviously if you're in the hospital and you're walking around and you're around anybody at any time, you always have to wear your mask. Now, we are allowed to wear cloth masks that we have bought like online or wherever. They're non-medical masks. We're allowed to wear those if we're not around patients, just each other. And now for around patients, we are supposed to don a medical mask, which I do wear whenever we're in clinic and patients are actually being seen in the clinic. But it just really surprised me that I guess the problem has gotten so bad that they've had to erect a specialized building just for the employee testing, which I was talking to Kevin about this. And, you know, I mean, I hope to never have COVID. But if I ever do, I don't know that I would want to be tested. And I'm just wondering if the hospital would make me get tested if I were all of a sudden, you know, calling in sick and not feeling well and needing to stay home, especially in my case, because I've worked for this hospital, this doctor's, this clinic for 9 years now, and I have never been sick one day this entire time I've worked there. Now, I did have to go home around lunchtime one day because I was feeling pretty nauseous. So I went home, I threw up, and I thought, you know, I feel great. I went back to work. So I don't know if you can actually count that as a sick time, but I'm never sick. My management knows this. So if I ever call in sick, it's going to be very unusual. Like I'm dying, like there's something seriously wrong. So it makes me wonder if that happens, if they're going to make me take a COVID testing or COVID test. And, you know, I just don't want to do that. I don't want to be another number in, you know, this whole mess. Even though that sounds selfish, because obviously if I have COVID, I don't want to take it back to work with me and give it to my coworkers. But let's just hope that doesn't happen. So far, we've been very lucky, very, very lucky. And nobody in our clinic has had anything like that happen or had to be tested for COVID. And God forbid if any of our surgeons get anything. I don't know. Are they going to close our whole clinic down? I mean, it just makes you wonder what's going to happen. But anyway, that was really a weird and sobering thought to come back from vacation from. Not that I'm not taking COVID seriously. That's not at all what I'm saying. COVID is obviously real. People have died from this. But I'm just not as freaked out or, you know, as everybody else is. I just feel like everybody's so freaked out about COVID. And let's talk about COVID. 2020 has been a bitch, hasn't it? Can you believe this year? I mean, obviously COVID and then all the riots, and it's just been a huge mess. And of course, it's an election year, so that just adds, you know, an extra layer of complexity to an already crappy situation. But with me working in medical, obviously COVID's been huge for me in my personal life. I feel like, here's my personal thought on this, and this is just my opinion. I feel like we have completely and totally overreacted to this disease. Now, let's be fair. When COVID first happened, we didn't know what we were dealing with. It was a novel virus. Haven't dealt with it before. We didn't know how it was going to affect people. The initial projections and models were millions of people, or a couple million people could potentially die from this disease. So we were cautious, understandably so, especially since we didn't have any medicines, any treatments that we knew would be effective against this virus. So we erred on the side of caution. We shut everything down. We said, you know, stay away from people. Don't go out unless you have to. 2 weeks. Let's give it 2 weeks and let's find out what we're dealing with. And then we'll go from there. Well, that 2 weeks is stretched into 8 months. And there are sections of our country that still refuse to open up because they're so freaked out about the coronavirus. Now that we know more about it, now that we have medications that have been proven very effective in dealing with the virus, I think that we can't backtrack from what we did before without making it seem like, oh, well, it wasn't as bad as we thought. We're so sorry we closed the economy down. We're so sorry you lost your job and you can't pay your bills and you're stressed out. Now I feel like we've dug ourselves into a hole that we don't know how to dig ourselves out of. Our elected officials and the media, especially the media, have done such a fantastic job of freaking everybody out and poking our fears to the point where some people are just paralyzed. They just don't want to live their life because they don't want to get COVID. And here's the thing. No one wants COVID, and it doesn't sound pleasant, but it's not a death sentence. If you get COVID, it does not mean you're going to die. In fact, just the opposite. The percentage of people dying from COVID is extremely small. Let me give you, let me read you a little bit from an article that was from WND entitled Top Infectious Disease Experts Launch Drive to End Lockdowns. There is a petition going around being signed by epidemiologists. that says we have got to stop with the lockdowns, that people need to get out and live their life. We need to, you know, promote herd immunity and protect our vulnerable. Excuse me. We don't need to lock up the healthy people. We need to protect our vulnerable people, which at this stage we know for a fact is people with comorbidities, which means multiple medical problems, and that could be heart disease, lung disease, diabetes, obesity, anything that would potentially prevent you from getting over a sickness in a timely manner is basically what a comorbidity is. And because the media has hyped this up so much and scared everybody so much that it has become, it's become a death sentence for a lot of people as far as how they think of it. In this article, I quote, the CDC last month issued new estimates that showed people under 50 years infected by COVID-19 have nearly 100% survival rate. It broke down to 99.997% survival rate for people 0 to 19 years old, 99.98% for ages 20 to 49, 99.5% for 50 to 69 year olds, and 94.6% for those over 70. Those who died of coronavirus, according to the CDC, had an average of 2.6 comorbidities, meaning more than two chronic diseases along with COVID-19. Overall, the CDC says just 6% of the people counted as COVID-19 deaths died of COVID-19 alone. 6%. So of that 210,000, as of the date of this podcast, people that have died, 6% of that population actually died from COVID, not from COVID complications. Now, that's not to say that all those people that died don't mean anything. That's not at all what this means. That means that those poor people that have died would probably have died if they had gotten the flu or pneumonia or some other sickness that would have prevented them from healing because of those comorbidities that already have. So when you put it into perspective and you think about it that way, it's not as deadly as we first thought it was going to be. And thank God. Thank God it wasn't as bad as we thought it was going to be. And it's not, it's manageable, and hopefully we can control it at some point. We do have some medications that are promising and have been tried, and they are working on a vaccine as we speak, and hopefully we'll have that vaccine very soon. But people need to understand that it's not as deadly as first projected. Again, very, very thankful that that's the case. But you cannot allow this to ruin or rule your life forever. That you just can't do that. We have to learn to live with this, just like we've learned to live with influenza and other sicknesses. Which brings me to the whole political part of this podcast. And let's talk a little bit about the politics. So I lean toward the right. I would like to think of myself as more of an independent. I would prefer that government get out of my life entirely and leave me alone and let me make my own decisions about my own life. I have free will. Allow me to use that free will. I don't want anybody telling me what I can and cannot do. I don't want to rely on any person or entity for my life or my livelihood. So that's kind of where I'm at here. So just know that anything that I'm reading you is going to have a little bit of a right slant. I am definitely more conservative than liberal. But I also like to challenge myself to try to think of these things as fairly as possible and to look at both sides of the story. So when Trump was and First Lady Melania was first diagnosed with COVID, I was scared for them. Not because I thought they were going to die, but because he's the president of the United States and how long was this going to put him down, basically. Obviously, he can't be down for very long because he's the president of the United States, and it's an election year, and, you know, we need him healthy so that he can run for another term. That was really where my thoughts were. I wasn't necessarily scared of him dying. I was more concerned about him being out of commission for a while. And, you know, the timing couldn't be any more less perfect, you know, 4 weeks, 3 weeks before the election. But I have made the mistake of being on Twitter. Now, I'm on Twitter. I have stayed off of it for a very long time. And I have been on it more recently, just out of curiosity, if nothing else. And so I've been reading some tweets. And when that announcement came out about Trump and Melania having COVID, the sheer amount of hate and vitriol was astonishing to me. People were calling for his death. They were cheering. They thought, you know, people were already talking about coffins and burials and funerals and what are we going to do when he's gone? And I mean, just the sheer evilness of people and their happiness that this man now has COVID, and ha ha, now you have COVID, sir, and I hope you die. That's, you guys, seriously, what the hell? That's not right. I mean, I don't like Joe Biden. I certainly don't care for Kamala Harris, but I would never wish death on them. I would never wish them to suffer from some disease just because I don't like them. Come on, grow up, people. That's awful. So that alone disturbed me. And then luckily, thank God, they had some really good doctors at Walter Reed, and they took care of Trump, and they gave him some medication that, you know, that was really effective. And now he's back in the White House, and he's been tested for COVID, and he's now negative. So thankfully, he's back up and running, and he was only out of commission for a few days. And, you know, he's tweeting, don't be afraid of COVID. Don't let it dominate your life. And once again, people are just going nuts over this. How could you say that? How could you downplay COVID? 210,000 people have died from COVID. Again, not from COVID, but, you know, the complications from COVID. Again, not downplaying that, not saying that you know, that's what they deserved or anything like that. I'm just saying, let's get our facts straight, that only 6% of people that have had COVID have actually died from COVID complications, not from other things they already had going into the illness. But that is not what Donald Trump is saying. And I wish people would stop perceiving everything that he says out of context, or, you know, with some deeper meaning. What President Trump was saying is that don't let this illness that is turning out to be not as deadly as we thought to rule your life, to dominate your life, to allow you to not be too afraid to leave your house and live your life. That's what he was trying to say to people, because it has been such an obsession with everyone for so many months that everybody is just on edge and worn out and depressed. And it shouldn't be like that anymore. But we have elected officials that, for whatever reason, they want to keep the fear hyped up. They want to keep people locked down. And it's evil. It's an evil place to be, and to portray that this is going to kill you, basically. And it is possible. I mean, it's possible it could kill you, but, you know, so could walking across the street and getting hit by a car, or getting into your car and driving to work. Or, you know, there are a lot of things that could potentially kill you. That's just part of life. But that shouldn't prevent you from living this life. And that's what President Trump was trying to say in his tweets. So anyway, I don't want to make this whole podcast about COVID, because I know we're all sick to death of thinking about it and talking about it and dealing with it on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, who knew that we would be at a stage in our life where not only do we have a multitude, an assortment of masks to wear with various outfits, but, you know, it would be just weird to see people out without a mask. This is where we are. And I know that everybody feels the same way, but we need to get past this. This is crazy. And it just, every time we think we're making some progress, somebody comes up with something new or a different angle, and it gets everybody stirred up and fearful again. And it's gotten to the point where now it's just evil to, you know, continue this narrative. So I guess all of that to say is, you know, whatever you read, whatever you hear, just take it with a grain of salt, people. There's always two sides to a story, not just one. And, you know, it always behooves you to go to the source and, you know, listen and read the context of what's being told you. It's more than just a soundbite. But anyway, enough of that. I'm tired of talking about COVID. Did you guys see the VP presidential debate between Kamala Harris and Mike Pence? I obviously saw a lot of sound bites, read a lot of Twitter, which I don't know why. I need to get off Twitter again. It's so toxic. But Kevin recorded it, and he and I sat down and watched it from start to finish the other night. And, you know, it went pretty much the way I was predicting. I thought that Pence would be cool and controlled, and he was very articulate. Kamala Harris, you know, did pretty much what I expected her to do. She sat there and she smirked and she rolled her eyes and she got indignant and "I'm speaking, sir," and blah, blah, blah. And pretty much, you know, wouldn't tell the truth or answer any questions, which I knew that was going to happen as well. The whole thing about her not, you know, she's in favor of fracking. There are multiple videos, just look it up on YouTube, of her flat out saying, "No, I do not support fracking." And, you know, just flat out lies. She's done a whole 180 from when she was running for president. And now that she's Biden's vice president, nominee or ticket or whatever you want to call it, now, you know, all of a sudden her views have changed. And someone that wishy-washy does not deserve to be in the office. What, you are either for something or you're not for something. Have the balls to stand up and back that up. I thought the monitor did a pretty decent job. I mean, she was there to enforce the rules that the campaign had agreed upon before the debate. Of course, you know, some of the questions are pretty skewed, but I think Pence did a pretty good job of, you know, when it was his turn to talk, to say, you know what, I'm going to answer that question in a minute, but I want to go back and respond to blah, blah, blah. I thought that was a great way of controlling the conversation and letting the moderator know that you are not going to control this debate and I'm not your puppet and I'm going to say what I want to say. And I thought that was pretty great. So overall, obviously, it's not going to sway my opinion. It probably didn't sway very many Americans either watching it, but it was refreshing to see a debate that was actually a debate as opposed to the fiasco that was whatever you want to call between President Trump and Joe Biden when they just basically screamed over each other. And Biden called Trump a clown and told him to shut up and all that stuff, too. And then Trump, you know, being Trump, he's a New Yorker, guys. He's gonna say it like it is, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but I wish he would have a little bit more diplomacy at times. But if there are any future presidential debates, I hope that President Trump learns a little something from Pence, or Pence, you know, kind of guides him on the proper way, I guess, to debate someone. So, but it was, you know, it was informative. And I don't know. I don't know that many Americans are really going to look at it too much into it. They're just going to take it at face value and they're going to hear what they want to hear. They're not going to actually take the time to be impartial and be fair. But I mean, what do you expect? Oh, something else I wanted to talk about real quick was, I don't know if you guys have noticed the latest public service announcement from our esteemed actors and actresses, but there is a PSA out where these actors and actresses are naked. It's called the Naked Ballot. And they're actors who are supposedly really naked, encouraging people to get out and vote. Are you kidding me? It's disgusting and so tasteless that these actors have put themselves in a situation where they're naked and trying to convince people to go out and vote. Is that what it takes nowadays to get people's attention? Really? That is just sad. That's just sad. Let's see what else. Oh, I was going to talk about Pelosi's 25th Amendment. If this is not something you're aware of, I highly recommend you pay attention. This could potentially be a very dangerous road to go down in the future. So basically, Nancy Pelosi, who is an evil woman, in my opinion, has been trying to bring some attention to the 25th Amendment. And if you don't know what that is, it's the 25th Amendment to the United States Constitution deals with issues related to presidential succession and disability. It clarifies that the vice president becomes president, as opposed to acting president, if the president dies, resigns, or is removed from office, and establishes procedures for filling a vacancy in the office of the vice president and for responding to presidential disabilities. Now, if you, again, search this on YouTube, I'm not making this up, in the speech that Pelosi gave, she flat out says this does not pertain to Donald Trump. This is in regards to future presidents. And by that, I am pretty sure she means that if Biden wins, they have every intention of probably saying that he's mentally incapable of being the president of the United States, remove him from office, and then Kamala Harris is our president. If that doesn't scare you, then I don't know what will. Kamala is very radical in her views and her ideals. And if she were to become president, I really would truly be scared for this country. That scares me more than COVID, for sure. So the fact that Pelosi is bringing this up now, I don't think it really has anything to do with Donald Trump at this stage. Now, she may try to pull something on him if Trump wins the election. But I really just think that this, I think she's priming the machine. She's oiling, she's oiling the machine for future, for whatever happens after the election, for potentially trying to remove the president. If, you know, I don't know. I feel like that's what she's doing. Also, I feel like it's a distraction because people are so easily distracted nowadays that it doesn't take much. I mean, goodness, how many people were totally distracted by the fly that landed on Vice President Pence's head during the debate? I mean, the number of people that were just like fixated on that stupid fly. So again, it doesn't take much to distract the American people. But I'm bringing this up to just inform you that this is a potentially big, serious issue that could come down the pike. And Pelosi is talking about, you know, putting a committee of past presidents and medical professionals together. And basically, this committee would determine the fate of our country. And screw the voters. We don't care what you guys want. We're gonna decide for you because we know what's best. So anyway, if you haven't heard anything about it, I encourage you to look it up. Look more in depth about what is actually being proposed. And just know that, you know, you need to pay attention because this stuff could potentially change the course of our country forever. If that sounds dramatic, so be it, because I kind of feel like this is a potentially dramatic issue that we're going to have to deal with at some point. Okay, let's switch gears again. Enough with the politics. Let's get back to something a little bit lighter. Kevin and I have another podcast that we do weekly where we talk primarily politics. So if you want to hear any more about our views on the craziness that is our world right now, then you might search for Right From Us. That's R-I-G-H-T From Us. And you can find it on Spotify if you, or any other kind of podcast. Again, there's a link on my blog too if you want to go check it out. But Kevin and I talk in depth about a lot of these issues on our podcast if you want to know more about that. So anyway, okay, so enough with that. Let's get to the weekly book review. So I read a book. The title of it was Stories We Never Told by Sonia, I'm going to butcher her last name, Yoerg. It's Y-O-E-R-G. And I gave it 3 out of 5 stars. Let me kind of read you an excerpt from it, and then I'll give you my thoughts. So this is an excerpt from Stories We Never Told by Sonia Yoerg. Sorry, Sonia, if I didn't pronounce your name right. Chapter 1. Just Dinner. The innocence of the phrase is deceptive as the dinner itself would turn out to be, as Jackie would discover 98 days later. Dinner with friends, a table for four. Dinner with people she thought she knew and loved. As it turns out, no one is who she believed they were, least of all herself. So much secrecy, and in its service, so many lies, and shame, at least for some. They say the infamous authoritative they, that the worst lies are those you tell yourself. Even before the dinner, before everything began to unravel, Jackie had been skeptical of the veracity of that old chestnut. Being true to yourself is noble, but other people's lies can cripple you whether you are self-actualized or not. All it takes is a little misplaced trust, a scrap of faith made of white cloth. That night at dinner, a match would be struck and the white cloth lit, although it would burn slowly. Slow, too, would be the dawning of Jackie's understanding. She knew, in her mind, not her heart, that appearances could be deceptive, and that love, desire, and ambition makes it harder to see others for who they are. Smart, rational people, even those who study people for a living, like Jackie, can get it wrong. Dead wrong. For a second time, Jackie checks her hair and makeup in the visor mirror, stalling. She hates being late, and there's no reason to dawdle now. It is, after all, just dinner with two people she knows intimately. Miles, her husband of 18 months, and Harlan, her colleague in the psychology department, and her former boyfriend. Oh, and a surprise guest. Jackie frowns at herself and fusses with her eyebrow. She also hates surprises. She hasn't seen Miles in 10 days. It's his busy season, scouting young athletes, football players mostly, hoping to sign them. He's meeting her at the restaurant. She checks her watch. 10 minutes ago. Harlan's been on sabbatical the last year, and during that interval, they met only once, briefly, at a conference. Has she missed him? Of course. You don't date a man for 5 years, then pretend he has nothing going for him, especially when that man is Harlan. Jackie's not a revisionist. The three have had dinner before, many times, and weathered the initial awkwardness. It was Harlan's idea to socialize when Jackie and Miles began dating 4 years ago. He invited them to a Redskins game, and the men became fast friends, with no apparent jealousy on either side. The psychology department isn't big enough to harbor an enemy, so Jackie welcomed the chance to normalize her relationship with Harlan. Phone in hand, Jackie grabs her bag, opens the door. She's parked too close to the next car and maneuvers through the narrow gap, scuttling sideways, sucking in her stomach to avoid getting dirt on her dress. She texts Miles, "In 5," and hurries out of the parking garage. She glances at her screen, reading Harlan's message from earlier today for the 5th time. "Bringing a friend tonight, so change the table to 4. Eager to catch up with you and Miles, it's been too long." A friend? Never did a word convey less. If Harlan meant to arouse her curiosity, he'd succeeded. So that's an excerpt from chapter 1 from Stories We Never Told. And I gave it 3 stars primarily because I could not stand Jackie. I cannot stand women who cannot get past a past relationship or a man. Here is a woman who is now supposedly happily married to a man, but she just cannot get over her past boyfriend. First of all, they're friends. I don't believe that's a very good idea. I don't know that a man and woman can ever truly just be friends, especially if you were romantically involved at some point in your life. That's like, to me, befriending people on Facebook that I used to date, like old boyfriends. I would not do that to Kevin. I just think it's rude, and I would not appreciate him befriending some old girlfriends on Facebook. I just think that's a part of your past that needs to stay in the past. And if you're obsessed about this person, then it means you have not gotten over this person. And what are you doing married to someone else? I think it's rude and disrespectful to your current partner. So the fact that she absolutely obsesses about Harlan, her past boyfriend, this entire story, to the point where she's basically stalking him and his new girlfriend, is disgusting to me. I can't get past it. I can't. Jackie is not a likable person to me. I don't relate to her, and I just think she's being immature and childish, and she just needs to grow a pair and move past this relationship. So I can't get past that, I guess, with the story, and that's why I gave it 3 out of 5 stars. It's not a bad story. It's it moves along well. There's some pretty interesting twists and turns, but I just can't get past the fact that Jackie is this professional professor, tenured professor at this university, and she just acts like a teenager when it comes to the Harlan and her past relationship. And eventually she grows up and she sees the error of her ways, so to speak. Obviously, I'm not going to give away any spoilers. And do I think it's worth a read? Yeah, I think it's worth a read if you don't mind that kind of character, but it just was a little too much for me. I think I would have appreciated this story more if she hadn't been quite as obsessed with Harlan and the past relationship. But by the end of the story, I understand why the author took us there. I understand why the author made the character the way she is. As far as how the story ended, again, it was fine. It was a decent ending. It was a little anticlimactic from what it was building up to. And I feel like the ending was less than satisfactory because the person at the end of the story didn't get his or her just desserts, in my opinion. It would have been nice to see the antagonist suffer a little more. But was it realistic? Gosh, I want to say no. I would like to say no, but I think it probably was. I think a lot of people are obsessed with past relationships and they just get to a point where they can't let go and move forward. And it's sad. And it makes me very impatient to see that and to read that kind of story. Because I just want to take Jackie and just shake her and go, would you please grow up and move on? But anyway, so it was a 3 out of 5 stars. I don't know that I would necessarily recommend it. I think this was a story that I got for free from being an Amazon Prime member. If you're an Amazon Prime member, you get your choice of a free book every month. These are basically books that have not, they're new releases, and there are not a lot of reviews on the book. So you're kind of taking your chance on picking one because for me personally, like on my Goodreads account, I don't read anything under 4 stars. I'm a Kindle Unlimited member and I only read Kindle Unlimited books for a couple of reasons. One, I'm a cheapskate, guys. I can't dish out the money to buy books. Books are expensive. And if you're a Kindle Unlimited member, you only pay $10 a month for unlimited books. Now, granted, these books are not necessarily on the New York Times bestseller list, but to be completely honest with you, I don't have a lot of luck with New York Times bestsellers. I find a lot of them way overhyped and not that interesting, and I'm constantly disappointed by them. So the Kindle Unlimited books are by lesser known authors, and I have really been thoroughly enjoying the books that I've been reading from the Kindle Unlimited. Again, I only pick books that have no less than 4 stars rating on the Goodreads site. I trust the Goodreads readers more than I trust the readers from Amazon. I find like they're just, I don't know, their opinions are more aligned with what my tastes are. And I've not been disappointed in quite a while. That's one reason why I'm really back into reading, because there for a while was picking out real stinkers and I just didn't care to read them. It's just not very much fun. So anyway, so this is one of the stories that I picked from being an Amazon Prime member. And I've stopped doing that. I've stopped picking those books out every month because they've just been consistently disappointing to me. And so consistently 3 out of 5 stars. And if I'm going to spend my time reading a book, I really would rather spend my time on a book that's been rated, highly rated. And, you know, I mean, this Stories We Never Told book rating on Goodreads is 3.71 stars out of 5. So my 3 out of 5 is pretty consistent, I feel like, with the ratings on Goodreads. But anyway, just another book to consider if you're looking for something to read. All right. Well, wow, we're at 50 minutes, people, and I know you have a lot of things to do. Your time is valuable. I really appreciate you sticking it out with me today, listening to my rants and raves. And that's basically what this podcast is about. It's just a little bit of everything that's happening in my life. And I just think it might be interesting to point out these things to people that may not be as aware of what's going on and the importance of paying attention to what is going on. And so, you know, perhaps I'm giving you a different perspective on a topic that you've heard a lot about. I highly encourage you to go out and read and find out more information about these topics, not just from one source, but from multiple sources. Get multiple points of view on an issue so that you can make a more informed decision yourself. We're not sheeple. We need to stand up and, you know, think for ourselves and be independent of everything that's going on right now. And there's a lot of stuff going on right now. So, all right. So I'm getting ready to go do some chores. I got to do some washing and cleaning the house a little bit. Tomorrow's a work day. So I hope that you all are doing well and that you're safe. And again, I appreciate your time, and I will talk to you.